But we can turn it around if we just connect humans to Mother Nature and the threats to Mother Nature. And nowhere is that more important than with our oceans and seas, because, of course, we can't see what's going on below the surface unless you happen to be, as my husband is, a scuba diver or someone who studies that kind of thing, a marine biologist. But since most of us are not that, we never get a chance to see what's under there unless it is brought to us. And that's why aquariums are so very important. And I don't think there's one that's more impressive than the Monterey Bay Aquarium. And I live in the Bay Area, where we have couple of impressive aquariums, the California Academy of Sciences, of course, in San Francisco's Golden Gate Park. We also have a smaller aquarium down in Fisherman's Wharf. I was just back at the Monterey Bay Aquarium with my husband and daughter a couple of months ago, and was falling in love all over again, not only with, of course, the great jellyfish exhibit and others, and you have so much there in terms of conservation and education, Ken Peterson, but also the, the seahorse exhibition was just not to be missed. So thanks for joining me, Ken Peterson.
It's nice to be here on World Oceans Day. Thank you for having me.
Happy World Oceans Day to you. And again, thank you for all the great work that you have been doing since the aquarium opened. That was what,
1984, so it's getting closer to 30 than 20. And,
time flies, my goodness.
But, yeah, trying always to keep changing because, you know, the stories are a little different, but the opportunities to fall in love are the same.
And yeah, we can't save and we won't save what we and work for what we don't know or love. And that's part of what you do so well, is make us fall in love with not just the oceans and the inhabitants of the ocean and what we might like to eat in terms of seafood on our plates, crab, lobster being among the favorites for Americans, but really just how incredible, you know, nature is, and especially, you know, unseen to us under the water. Just there's a great movie. Is it called Oceans that Disney did about a year ago?
There is, and there was one, the kind of Blue Planet one that came out of the BBC a little before that. And just really, when you see the diversity and the beauty of the creatures that live on the largest living space on our planet, I mean, 99% of the living space on planet Earth is really in the planet ocean portion.
And the color and the variety and some of it was humorous, you know, seeing these creatures that are just, you can't believe they're real, you know, like it looks like something George Lucas would, you know, make a movie about.
No, and well, you mentioned, you know, the seahorses here at the aquarium, and, you know, leafy sea dragons. People walk in, they think it's a piece of kelp drifting by, and there it is, it's an animal with this amazing color.
I didn't know there were camouflage seahorses. I never knew that.
Right. Go ahead.
Sorry, I just want to know if that was still there, because they said it was supposed to leave, but due to popular demand, you were keeping it there. And then go ahead with your thoughts. Sorry,
Secret Lives of Seahorses is going to continue for a while. So when people tell us that they want it to stay, we'll keep it around for a little while longer. And so seahorses are going to be here, including sea dragons.
And you can see horses again in all their, you know, bright color and shapes and varieties. But there's nothing quite like that. It's not the camouflage. What's it called? The one that's got all the green coming out of it. You can barely.
Well,
see it
is like a, it is a form of camouflage because it's blending in with its. But it's definitely body shape
that
helps it blend in so well. Yeah. But you know, really helping people fall in love is the starting point, and that can be whether it's, you know, individuals just going down, walking around on the beach at sunset, taking your kids off tide pooling, or going snorkeling or scuba diving on a vacation. I mean, those are the connections that really cement for people how important the oceans are. And there was just a gathering in San Francisco last week, looking at the ocean-mind connection and the ways in which the ocean works in our brains in positive ways to make us more content and make us a little more centered and being able to function better in this complex and sometimes confusing world. And, you know, we're just starting to understand how deeply we're rooted to the oceans. It's been said many times before and very eloquently, you know, if you wonder what your connection is with the earth, with the oceans, taste your tears. I mean, we are creatures from the sea. We are creatures connected to the sea. And ultimately, our survival as land dwellers depends upon the health of the oceans. Most of our oxygen comes from the oceans. We rely on the oceans for that sense of rejuvenation when we go down to the shore. For a billion people on Earth, seafood is the main source of protein in their diet. So they're and the oceans are really among the greatest regulators of the climate that we enjoy, that let us farm consistently and produce the food surpluses that let us build up our civilization the way we have over the past several millennia. So we need to keep thinking about what we're doing and what impact that has on the oceans, because they're fundamental to our survival. They're sometimes slow to react, and fortunately, they are resilient if given an opportunity to recover from whatever insults we've delivered in their direction.
To a point, but we don't want to cross that threshold, and we're in uncharted territory, both on land and in the sea.
Right. Well, I mean, one of the things that is a serious concern, and one that the Monterey Bay Aquarium has taken on over the last decade plus, is the issue of how we take fish from the ocean, whether it's wild caught or farmed. And it started out of an exhibit we had back in 1997 and has evolved into a program that is the number one for helping consumers and businesses make ocean-friendly seafoods choices. It's a program called Seafood Watch. It's available both through our website at MontereyBayAquarium.org, but increasingly now through smartphones. So if you have an iPhone or an Android, you can carry a Seafood Watch app, and it'll let you, on the spot, in a restaurant, at the seafood counter, choose a seafood that was farmed or wild-caught in a sustainable fashion. It'll also let you identify places where you find this kind of seafood, so you're crowdsourcing for sustainability, and other people who are wondering, well, I want to go out to a restaurant. I'm in Chicago. Where can I find one that has sustainable seafood? They can pop in and find out what everyone else has told them about it. So simple but profound, because if you give ocean fish populations a chance, they can rebound really rapidly. There's some good evidence coming out of the Gulf of Mexico this year that when fisheries were shut down because of the Deepwater Horizon disaster last year, they had unprecedented numbers of some fish species. Why? Because there were no boats going out catching them. So life is resilient. Life can endure and respond, and you have to give it that opportunity. And making those sustainable choices every day is one way.
And that is a wonderful tool that you have available to anyone. And it's also important, isn't it, to when you go to the grocery store and you're standing there in front of the seafood counter, to ask if you're not in a Whole Foods where they have it all now printed out in various places almost, to ask, where did that fish come from? Was it caught sustainably? And half the time, of course, they won't know if you're not in a Whole Foods type place. But by people asking, that requires that they do get educated.
Well, it's as with anything else, the more that businesses hear from their customers that they want something, the more inclined they are to meet those customers' needs. And that's the way the economic system can function to benefit the environment. If you don't buy a product, there's less of it in the market. If you do buy something, the market will create the product to meet that growing demand. And in the area of seafood, it's really, really encouraging that when we started Seafood Watch back in 1999, the industry was opposed. They said, this is a passing fad. You don't want to get in bed with the environmentalists. This is bad for you and bad for your business. Turn it around to today, where virtually every major retailer in the United States and Canada, and that includes Walmart and Costco and Safeway, as well as Whole Foods, are making commitments to source sustainable seafood and to begin to move from whatever they were sourcing before to get rid of those things that would be on the red list, species to avoid. Now, it's not going to happen overnight, but they've clearly gotten the message. And also, as businesses, they understand that if they exhaust all of the sustainable seafood, all the seafood from the oceans, they are wiping out products and potential customers and profits down the road. So there is some self-interest, and it's really great to see how quickly that can come about.
One of my favorite fish in the form of seafood, and my daughter's a vegetarian, and I have so much respect for people who just don't eat fish at all, including my friend Robin, who may be listening. She has her license plate says Ocean Euphoria. She's become an ocean nut. She does marine mammal rescue here in Marin County, and she just can't. She loves fish, but she can't bring herself to eat it anymore. And maybe more of us should go in that direction. But for those of us who are still enjoying seafood, is there any farmed fish that we can feel not too guilty about? Of course, if you're sensitive to the fact that you're eating, as my daughter would say, something that had a heart.
Right.
that it's polluting the waters that it's in, or are there actually some safer or completely truly sustainable fish farms?
There actually are quite a number, and you'll find them all at, you know, at modernbayaquarium.org in our Seafood Watch program, or on the apps if you get those, or on our mobile site. Shellfish are great ones. You know, you got Hog Island oysters right there in Marin County, and any farm mussels, clams, oysters, very low in terms of carbon footprint. They are actually leaving the oceans cleaner than they found them. If you're eating low other fishes that you can eat that are sustainably farmed, or things like catfish and tilapia, depending on where they come from, the U.S. farmed catfish, U.S. farmed tilapia are really high up the list. There are some farmed shrimps that are sustainable. There is even now a farmed salmon. It's an inland closed system, coho salmon, that was first started up in the Pacific Northwest in Washington State, and now that company is working with some colleagues, Hutter religious groups in Montana, who are using the same methods licensed by them, so you can get a farmed salmon there that's sustainable. So as more and more folks are looking for ways to protect the oceans and feed the market for seafood, because people want, you know, all the omega-3s in there for human heart,
right,
human health. There are entrepreneurs who are doing this in very creative ways.
Wonderful. It's good to know, because obviously wild caught is always best, but it's also more expensive. So we are seeing more and more, you know, seafood from fish farms. And I was really eager to get your, you know, take on that, because it comes to the point where there's only one or two wild-caught varieties available, and so much more farm fish. You know, so you can do that feeling pretty good about it if you're in the kind of place where they seem to be responsible. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
You update Sustainable Watch fairly frequently, don't you?
Seafood Watch is updated twice a year, and then sometimes we'll update reports for some of our major business partners. So we actually have been worked out agreements to advise some folks, Whole Foods being one of them, on how they can move their seafood to more sustainable sourcing. So you get companies like Aramark and Compass Group North America, which are the two largest food service companies that are working in universities and corporate cafes and at ballparks and coliseums and stadiums and places like that. And they want to make the same kind of shift. So we might give them more updated information more regularly to help them in their work with their suppliers and do some good sourcing.
Okay, so not to dwell too much on your Seafood Watch guide. It is
right.
A good hook, pun intended, I guess, to get people to see how they can make a difference.
Right.
But there are other ways as well, and that's in the form of plastic pollution, using water bottles. They may not be as obvious, those connections. So talk about the threat from plastic pollution to our ocean.
Well, plastic pollution is one of the big ones that is kind of in everybody's hands. As the demand for plastics has grown, we tend to forget that these things don't go away. They don't degrade. They don't get recycled as much as they should, and it all winds up heading downstream. When I was a kid, you know, you didn't go to the market and get a plastic bag that you would use. I mean, maybe you brought a cart or something. You know, I don't even remember what we'd do, but my grandmother used to walk around with one of those carts on wheels, and she'd be putting all of her stuff in there, and it was probably paper bags.
Just like the Europeans, you know, with their fishnet bags. You know,
or
put it all together.
Yeah.
It's
but
okay.
Then years later, I was living in Turkey for a while, and you'd be driving across the countryside, and there would be this open field where everything was blowing plastic bags that had snagged on brush. And I'm not going to pick on them as one place, but it's ubiquitous now that all of this plastic has become ingrained into so many products. And what we're learning now is it's all winding up in the oceans, by and large. A lot of it's affecting wildlife. I mean, people have been sensitive for quite some time to the notion of birds and other creatures getting caught in the six-packs from cans, aluminum cans. But now they're discovering these massive gyres, these currents where things just collect and don't go anywhere else. And the plastic is breaking down into smaller pieces. It's leaching chemicals into the ocean that are winding up in the food web. So we're getting that in our bodies, and it's a physical source of pollution that animals will eat. The saddest story, I think, is for the albatross, these wonderful oceanic birds that would spend years doing nothing but flying before they come back to find an island and nest. And they will, as dutiful parents, go out to collect food for their youngsters come back with a belly full of plastic pieces, feed that to the chick, and the chicks are starving to death because their bellies are packed full of this indigestible plastic, and they'll find carcasses of the dead birds just chock-a-block with plastic bits, things that we would recognize, cigarette lighters and bottle caps and toys.
Lids on Starbucks coffee, not just Starbucks, but Starbucks this morning.
I mean, the good news is it's something that everyone can do every day when you think about not recycling, but pre-cycling. Do I need to buy this? Do I need to buy this particular thing with this particular packaging? And, you know, I want to give a shout out to a company like Walmart that says, you know, we want to reduce packaging. We don't want to have the waste. A, it lets us put more products on the shelves, but B, it tells the manufacturers you don't need to seal this small thing in a mass of plastic and cardboard. And that has a big environmental impact on the scale of a retailer like that when they're using their buying power for good.
Exactly, and my pet peeve is, you know, people put those plastic lids on. We were at Starbucks this morning with my daughter and her friend, and it's like, why do people need to put plastic lids on and double cardboard rings when they're just walking 5 feet to sit down at a table to take all that off? Just think twice. If you have to get coffee on the go and you don't happen to have your mug with you, then do you really need that plastic? Because that's going to be there even longer than that paper cup will, forever.
And better to, absolutely, I mean, plastic does not go away. Even better is to bring those your own container with you and find ways to think about that in advance so you're not using disposable, because disposable is not sustainable. There are so many things that come downstream, and you know, we're in the gardening season right now, and you know, the chemicals that we put on our lawns and put in our gardens are things that are going to flow through storm drains to the ocean on a massive scale at what happens in the Mississippi Valley, and that's why you have dead zones off the coast of Louisiana and in the Gulf of Mexico, because when you put all those nutrients in the water, you feed a batch of life that then sucks the oxygen out of the water and dies, and that is causing disasters for marine life, whether it's things that we want to catch and eat or just for the health of the ecosystem.
So plastics and pesticides may prove to be our albatross in terms of what we're dumping into the ocean. And, of course, ocean acidification is making everything worse. That, of course, one of the outcomes of climate change.
Climate change, I mean, and the carbon pollution has so many insidious effects. And changing ocean chemistry, as you add carbon dioxide, gets into the oceans, changes that from the baser end of things moving toward more acidic. Well, what happens then is some of the smaller planktonic organisms with these delicate little shells are not going to be able to create those shells. Now you're attacking the base of the ocean food web, and that is going to have profound consequences for us. So it's another one of the unseen elements of climate change. There was just a study that Stanford University is publishing shortly that says that within 20 years to 60 years, depending where you are on planet Earth, we are going to be looking at a time when the coldest summers we experience are going to be hotter than the hottest summers we have experienced in the past. And that's frightening in terms of livability of major cities, in terms of predictability of growing crops. We have built our civilization in a period of relatively benign weather when you could raise crops with the expectation you're going to have summer rain for corn and soybeans. And if that goes away and the era of more intense storms and hotter summers is upon us, it's going to change vastly sustainability for life on Earth. So
not to mention what percentage of, I think it was large fish species may be extinct in 20 or 30 years?
Most of the large predators are gone. It's already 80 to 90% of some species of the largest fish are gone. It's one reason we encourage people to eat a more diverse group of seafood when you're eating it and to eat low on the food web. Things like sardines, which are incredibly healthy and in the hands of a great chef or even a great home cook, are extraordinarily tasty, but we've been conditioned to want to eat the steak, the big thing, the salmon or the tuna or the swordfish, and we need to think more diversely if we want to make sure that we are maintaining those healthy oceans, not just to feed us, but to have a healthy ocean ecosystem out there, too.
we humans have a big footprint, ecologically speaking, and Americans even more so. We could talk about that for the next half hour, but we just have another minute left, and
yeah.
I want to thank you for being with us and being such a great resource, the Monterey Bay Aquarium and the Seafood Watch Guide. And if I wrapped up this half hour and this program without mentioning my ocean shiro, who as we speak is on the Indian Ocean solo rowing across her third ocean, I would be remiss if I didn't mention Roz Savage.
There and, you go. Great
go
lady.
Roz.
And
she's got a fabulous blog. If you go to rozsavage.org.com, you'll find her, R-O-Z, Savage. She's anything but a savage. She is an ocean lover, a climate change activist extraordinaire. She inspires me every day as I get frustrated trying to get one green talk show on Americans' mainstream media airwaves. That's my quest, and I won't stop till we do that. Great to be on the Internet, but we need to reach more of the non-choir. So thanks for what you do to reach the public, Ken Peterson. I really appreciate it.
Thanks,
and
Bethany, and I hope that your green show will be green and blue for our planet ocean.
You've got it. In fact, isn't there a blue-green alliance or something like that?
There you go.
The oceans are 70% of our planet, and the rest is land, and it's all threatened, and we're part of the problem. So the enemy is us. That means there's something we can do about it, a lot we can do about it, and that's what this show is all about. Have a great green week. If you've missed part of the show, I want to invite you to go to either the archive at the Progressive Radio Network or on my website, www.thegreenfront.com. Please tell all your friends about this, and not just your green friends. The less green, the better, because they can learn a lot, as we all can, as we discover the challenges we face as a planet and also the solutions that are at hand that are relevant to each and every one of us, or as I say, only those who eat, breathe, or drink. See you next time.